And it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use, and I do suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, just so you can write something down. Uncle Dennis always has a web page or maybe an address or a telephone number, someplace that you might want to do something. Let's start off with announcements. Coming up July 23rd through the 29th, the Cascadia Trans and Women's Action Camp. Hi, folks. Planning on coming to the Trans and Women's Action Camp Cascadia in a couple of weeks? If so, please take a few seconds to fill out the RSVP form so that TWAC organizers can start getting an idea of who's coming to camp and what we need to do to make camp awesome and accessible as possible. Please share this RSVP form as widely as possible. Please note that filling out the RSVP form is not required to attend the Trans and Women's Action Camp, and you want to go to their webpage at twac.wordpress.com. That's twac.wordpress.com. Here's what you need to know about the Action Camp. TWAC at Cascadia will be holding an eco-defense action camp this summer in western Oregon, within 90 miles of Eugene. Come join us in the forest from July 23rd to the 29th for a week of discussion, skill shares, networking, workshops, storytelling, and action. This action camp is planned by and for folks who identify as women, transgender, transsexual, gender queer, or gender variant. There may be opportunities for CIS male allies to participate in support roles closer to July. We are dedicated to creating a space that is as accessible and inclusive as possible within the constraints of a backwoods setting. We are planning to set up childcare and maybe offering travel stipends to both workshop presenters and participants from traditionally underrepresented groups depending on funds. What is the Trans and Women's Action Camp? Trans and Women's Action Camp is a movement to unite, support, and inspire trans and women activists to take action against patriarchy, oppression, and exploitation in defense of our communities and ecosystems. We will start the search for fierce workshop presenters very soon. We will be looking for presenters especially on the topics of anti-racism, environmental justice, and trans liberation. If you'd like to be an organizer, have any ideas of how we can make this space more accessible, or workshops you'd like to see, please contact us. The email address is twac@riseup.net. That's twac@riseup.net. The Trans and Women's Action Camp Cascadia 2013 Substance Policy. TWAC Cascadia hopes to foster a welcoming and accessible environment for all participants, including those in recovery from addictions. For this reason, we are asking folks not to bring any drugs to the action camp besides those which are medically necessary. Alcohol use will be discussed on the first day of camp. Thank you. And once again, Trans and Women's Action Camp, July 23rd through the 29th near Eugene, Oregon. For more information, go to twac.wordpress.com. That's twac.wordpress.com. The California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team will be having a restoration this Saturday, July 13th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sunset Beach State Park. Back to the beach for the lazy days of summer to remove invasive summer mustard, ice plant, and a variety of other nasty weeds while hoping to restore the native dune community. Yellow and pink sand verbena, beech burr, and spine flower will be in full bloom. While you're there, take a swim or a walk or just enjoy this special place. I suggest you dress warmly because there might be some fog. Directions to Sunset Beach from Santa Cruz go south on Highway 1. Or east on Highway 1 for about 9 miles from its intersection with Highway 17. Take the San Andreas Road exit, go right towards the ocean on San Andreas Road for just over 5 miles to the not-so-obvious turnoff to the right for Sunset State Beach. Head down the road, stop at the kiosk. Explain you are there for volunteer work and habitat restoration, and get a parking slip for your vehicle. Drive up the left-hand side road down to the lower day-use parking area at the beach. We will meet at the south end of the parking lot Linda drives a silver Honda Civic hatchback and will have some tools and gloves. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine or fog. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring some gloves and water. For more information, contact Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. You could send her an email at redwoodrn. That's redwood, R-E-D-W-D-R-N, at packbell.net, or go to the website, www.cruzcnps.org, C-R-U-Z-C-N-P-S.org. And Earth First Rondi arrestees are out of jail. All of the 10 people jailed in Morganton, North Carolina, for protesting the Momentive Specialty Chemicals plant are out on bail. Arrestees include individuals from a wide range of groups who are resisting hydraulic fracturing in their regions, including Marcellus Earth First from Pennsylvania and New York, Radical Action for Mountain People's Survival from West Virginia, Curitan Earth First in North Carolina, and Everglades Earth First in Florida. The online site frackindustry.org is now up and running for people to take solidarity actions. Once again, that's frackindustry, all one word, .org. It's time to disrupt the chain of supply. The police in Western North Carolina instigated altercations and raised tensions at the site by calling in all of their forces, a prison transport bus, and the state police. However, the state police left the site and said they had no issue with protesters since they were not in the road. Morgantown police continued to escalate the situation. Many people were arrested as they were ordered to disperse, and people were attempting to walk out together. One person was tased and kneed in the head by Morgantown police. That person was later seen bleeding from the head, has some memory loss, and never received proper medical treatment in jail. The tripod occupiers were put in danger by emergency medical staff who came dangerously close to the legs of the tripods, and police repeatedly walked over their lifelines and were ordered to grab hold of the legs of the tripods. The last sitter was denied water by police and EMS. Momentive shipments were successfully blocked for the entirety of the day, and the police had to take down the tripod structures themselves. They do have some expenses, so please consider donating by clicking on their donate button on their webpage, croatanearthfirst.com. That's croatanearthfirst.com, C-R-O-A-T-A-N, earthfirst.com. And Greenpeace has successfully blocked a whale meat shipment in this story by Andrew Davies, no relation, of Greenpeace. Wednesday morning, Greenpeace Germany activists boarded a ship docked in Hamburg, Germany, and prevented it from leaving with a cargo of meat from endangered fin whales. Germany doesn't hunt whales, of course. Like almost every country in the world, the German government agrees that commercial whaling should be banned. Iceland, however, allows whale hunting, but fin meat isn't popular there either. So the fin whales killed in the Iceland hunt are exported to Japan, which has a small but dwindling market for the meat. By the time it reached Hamburg, the meat from approximately 10 fin whales was packed into 6 presumably refrigerated cargo containers. Last Friday, activists with boats and banners met the shipment in port upon its arrival. They escorted the ship into the harbor and informed the authorities. "We hope the job was done, but yesterday the authorities decided to let the shipment go. Activists had to take a stand or stand by and let their country be used as a transit point for the commercial whale trade. That is why 4 activists climbed onto the ship's mooring lines. Activists in boats were also at the stern of the ship holding a banner that said, 'Stoppen den Handel mit Wolffleisch,' or 'Stop trading in whale meat.' Suddenly, this was looking like a lot more trouble than the cargo company Charter Unifeeder wanted. The shipment was canceled, the meat was not loaded, and the activists came off the mooring lines, and the ship left port short 6 containers of whale meat. Today, activists can be proud for having done their part. It's going to be harder for the whalers to find another ship for their cargo after this, but governments also need to step in. We want you to ask the German Environment Minister Peter Altmaier and Hamburg Mayor Olaf Scholz to use this opportunity. A long-term, legally binding ban for whale meat shipments must be put in place. The United States already has rules under the Endangered Species Act which prevent this kind of thing. Germany and the Netherlands should follow suit. You can help encourage the German government to take action. Avaaz is rallying its members to contact the German government, and we encourage everyone to help. For more information, go to www.greenpeace.org. And today, Greenpeace activists scaled the Shard in Britain to send an Arctic message to Shell Oil. In this story by Matthew Taylor, Peter Walker, and Carl Matheson of The Guardian. The sight of six tiny figures inching up the smooth glass exterior of Europe's tallest building was almost too much for some of the onlookers gathered below. "Rather them than me," said Nigel Stewart, 55, who was on a day trip from home in Surrey with his wife and her sister. "We were on the viewing platform earlier and could see them coming up. It was quite a sight." Stewart was one of hundreds of people craning their necks at the base of the Shard in central London as a team of six environmental campaigners scaled the 310-meter glass tower, that's about 1,000 feet, above London Bridge to draw attention to Shell's oil and gas drilling plans in the Arctic. Speaking on a mobile phone, perched two-thirds of the way up the building, one of the climbers, Victoria Henry, aged 32, told The Guardian the climb had been exhilarating but challenging. "We are all exhausted because we are carrying a lot of weight and have been going since early this morning, but it is going really well. It seems that our message about what is happening in the Arctic is really getting out there, which is great." The idea for the protest was hatched 2 months ago when several Greenpeace activists visited the Shard's viewing platform. "We were standing there and realized we could see three Shell buildings, including its headquarters," said Ben Stewart, head of media at Greenpeace. "We realized if we can see them, they can see the Shard, so it would be a perfect place to get our message across to them." A group of female Greenpeace activists took up the challenge under the code name Sigmund after Freud and his theories on why people climb tall buildings, and a detailed plan was put in place. Stewart said it has taken a lot of work and the people involved have not had much sleep. The activists, all experienced climbers, arrived at the base of the Shard at 4:20 in the morning in a specially designed van with a flip roof. This allowed them to lock themselves inside, push a ladder through a hole in the roof, and clamber onto the top of London Bridge Station's ticket hall. From there, they could access the bottom of the Shard and start the climb. Greenpeace said the women, who were sustained by a diet of energy bars and cheese bagels, used a combination of traditional mountain climbing and rope access techniques used by commercial building climbers. Each stage of the climb required the lead climber to free climb a section of the building. Once she had a secure position, she fixed a rope to the external skeleton of the building, and the rest of the group followed using the rope. All the climbers were wearing harnesses, meaning they could not fall more than 6 meters, about 20 feet, if they slipped. Five stopped 20 meters below the top, that's about 60 feet, before the youngest of the group, Wiola Smul, a 23-year-old student from Poland, made the final ascent. She reached the top before 7 p.m., but as the climb had taken several hours longer than the women had expected, the group did not have time to unveil the giant polar bear down the side of the building, though they did unfurl a Save the Arctic banner to cheers from supporters below. The women then made their way inside the building. Scotland Yard said that all six protesters had been arrested up on suspicion of aggravated trespass. Scaffolder Johnny Arthur, 59, who was watching the climbers, had nothing but admiration. "I say good luck to them. They want to make a statement and they are prepared to do something about it. I think it is great because people have to realize there are consequences to what we are doing. I don't want to be in the position a couple of years from now where we are showing children pictures of tigers or polar bears and saying, we used to have animals like this." And California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers have caught poachers at Riverside County Lake. Wildlife officers from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife recently cited four fishing poachers for illegally catching more than 200 fish in a private community lake in Riverside County. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers received an anonymous tip that four men were using gill nets to take fish from a remote area of Canyon Lake. Gill and throw nets are illegal to possess within 100 yards of any inland body of water in the state. Wardens contacted the fishermen as they were leaving the water with the nets and seized one gill net, one throw net, and 238 fish, which included 29 carp, 126 sunfish, and 83 bass, of which 74 fish were undersized. Anglers often complain about the low number of fish in area lakes, and illegal activities like this are often a leading culprit, said Warden Dustin Holyoke. If it had not been for the actions of a responsible citizen, this activity could have gone on indefinitely until the population of fish in that lake was depleted. The four men were cited and released on June 23rd. They were charged with fishing without a license, possession of illegal fishing gear, over-limit of sunfish, over-limit of bass, and possession of short fish. And their charges are pending with the Riverside County District Attorney. Unfortunately, all the seized fish were dead and could not be returned to the water. For more information, go to the following website, www.dfg.ca.gov. And a Marin plan for a wildlife habitat gets priority over fire breaks in this story by Nels Johnson of the Marin Independent Journal. Traditional fire break and fuel break practices on 16,000 acres of open space managed by Marin County must be minimized to make habitat the priority while accommodating public safety, a consultant said. The draft Biodiversity and Vegetation Management Plan by May & Associates Incorporated of San Francisco says 70 additional miles of fuel breaks as envisioned by the county's 2008 fire management program are unnecessary and could be destructive. The fire plan would clear 1,000 acres, tripling existing fuel break areas. But as it stands, the fire policy the new plan adds would result in a tenfold increase in direct loss of native vegetation and open new areas to invasion by non-native species, whose seeds could disperse from 70 miles along ridgetops to the slopes below. Consultant Lauren May, a noted botanist, was paid $407,000 for the report, along with earlier associated consultant work, along with editing, as well as money set aside for environmental review expenses. The vegetation plan could cost Marin as much as $660,000. A $500,000 roads and trails plan is in the works as well. The plan, covering far more than fire issues, provides an extensive review of science literature and other studies on open space management, outlines Marin's open space habitat, plant, and wildlife diversity, proposes vegetation management zones, and describes the best management practices. It calls for an ambitious program involving more data collection, monitoring, restoration work, and a variety of projects and additional studies. Construction of fuel breaks should be minimized because they provide limited effectiveness against wildland fires and primarily serve to facilitate fire management activities by aiding firefighting access, according to the plan. Fire hazards can be more effectively reduced by focusing on defensible space zones near structures. The establishment of defensible space zones along the wildland-urban interface is the most effective approach to reducing fire risk, as opposed to the construction of primary or secondary fuel breaks, the plan's report. Thus, Marin is shifting its fuel reduction strategy away from classic fuel management. Residents must be advised of their responsibility to maintain defensive areas around their homes, the plan says, while high-risk areas near development will be managed as ignition prevention zones, requiring consultation with park staff. County Fire Chief Jason Weber said the plan does not eliminate or preclude fire breaks, but rather provides a matrix of issues that will allow decision-makers to balance environmental concerns with firefighter safety and community protection. He noted that open space district lands are critically important, but represent a small fraction of the 340,000 acres of state, federal, and county land the County Fire Department has a hand in protecting. Having a vegetation management plan is a good, sound policy decision because it will give us a common platform to make fire prevention decisions regarding county open space lands, he added. Parks Chief Linda Dahl, whose staff is in line for new roles advising fire officials about prevention activities on open space land, said that parks officials are looking to balance fire protection strategies with the district's other mandates. Dahl added, "This plan is not simply a fire plan. The open space district manages 16,000 acres of very dense natural lands that were acquired for natural Resource Protection and Recreation. Dahl also said the Open Space District works with the county's fire service agencies to find the most effective ways to reduce fuels and at the same time balance the needs of the natural environment. Further, Dahl added, we enjoy a very cooperative relationship with the county fire agencies, rely on their expertise, and look forward to continue working with them to reduce fuels and maintain appropriate fire access to keep the community safe. Tempers flared among executives with different land management roles several months ago when Dahl criticized Mill Valley fire officials for allowing the clearing of a ridgetop fire break in a county preserve. The turf flap raised eyebrows at both City Hall and the Civic Center, with bruised feelings persisting in some quarters. The vegetation plan, headed for an unveiling on July 16th at a rare joint meeting of Parks Commissioners and County Supervisors, was issued as an administrative draft on April 30th and has circulated privately since then. It surfaced publicly last week after formal public records request by the Independent Journal. And here's the forestry update for July of 2013. The Soquel Demonstration State Forest Advisory Committee continues its review of the management plan. The 2013 Soquel State Forest Draft Management Plan with revisions, along with the agenda for the June 18th Advisory Committee meeting, the first meeting of the committee in a year. According to CAL FIRE, the review of the management plan was put on hold during the 2012 operating season. The committee will be reviewing Chapters 8, Demonstration and Education, Chapter 9, Timber Management, and 10, Research of the Plan, and submitting documents to Angela Bernheisel, Forest Manager, by July 9th. Anyone can comment. The next advisory committee meeting will be held at 9 a.m. July 23rd at the Scotts Valley City Council Chambers. At the June 18th meeting, the committee was apprised of new 228-acre THP submitted for Amaya Creek on the Soquel Demonstration State Forest. It will include a fuel break along the western boundary and an upgrade of the Amaya Creek Road. CAL FIRE is in the process of scheduling the pre-harvest inspection. There was a report of the large woody debris work on Soquel Creek and additional work to be done. A good portion of the June 18th meeting was taken up with a report and discussion on the flow trail that will be built by the Mountain Bikers of Santa Cruz in the Soquel Demonstration Forest within the area of the recently completed Rim Timber Harvest Plan. Mountain Bikers of Santa Cruz has hired Drew Perkins, who will oversee construction of this completely new trail. The trail will use three existing Class 3 crossings, which will be upgraded as rock ford crossings so they can be used during the winter. One committee member noted that this trail was a good idea as it would keep mountain bikers off skid trails. Another committee member hopes to create a similar trail along Amaya Creek. A third member, previously a CAL FIRE employee, stated that he did not think trails needed to be multi-use in response to comments from the public that it is pretty hard for equestrians and hikers to safely utilize trails taken over by the mountain bike community. And AB 904, here's a brief update. AB 904, the bill create working forest management plans for ownerships of up to 15,000 acres, is currently in suspense. It is not listed on the agenda for the next Senate Appropriations Committee meeting scheduled for August 12th. The author, Wes Chesbro, was directed to work with Senate Water and Natural Resources Committee staff on amendments to the bill. Some senators are also working with Chesbro on additional proposed amendments regarding the Southern Subdistrict. The California legislature is in recess for the month of July. THP 1-13-045 Santa Cruz has been returned. This is the 166-acre Hendricks and Hogan plan, which had not yet been filed at the right time of writing the June forest update. The plan encompasses 11 parcels, and Marshall Creek is a 300-foot downstream to the east of the THP boundary. Fall Creek is adjacent to the timber harvest plan. The plan is also adjacent to Fall Creek State Park. Both creeks are tributaries to the San Lorenzo River. The plan is located 1.1 miles west of the town of Ben Lomond. The registered professional forester is Harlan Tranmer. Mr. Tranmer neglected to follow a number of very basic forest practice rules during plan preparation. He failed to notice the City of Santa Cruz Water Department as required. The notice of intent was also neglected to include a required statement that the approximately approximate property lines have been flagged for review where truck roads, tractor roads, or harvest areas are within 100 feet of the property line. There are also acreage inconsistencies in the plan. Is it 134 or is it 166 acres? While the plan notes that a portion of the plan area drains to Alba Creek is not listed in the, as a public domestic water notification ad is required. The alternatives analysis failed to include a description of the basic objectives of the project. CAL FIRE also noted additional problems with the erosion hazard rating map, the winter operating plan, proposed operations within the channel zone, information on channel crossings, identification of which methods will be utilized to address California red-legged frogs, and other issues. Mr. Tranmere is a staff forester for Big Creek Lumber. Now that the public will be paying for the cost of agency review of timber harvest plans through the recently imposed timber tax, we suggest that Big Creek Lumber ensure that their foresters are all up to speed on the California forest practice rules prior to preparing timber harvest plans. I'm certain the public will not be interested in having their hard-earned dollars squandered on unnecessary agency hours spent attempting to bring THPs into basic compliance with the rules and regulations of the state of California. And the Redwood Meadows Ranch THP 1-12-71 SCR is still open. Even though the Semper Virens Fund recently purchased timber rights on the lion's share of the acreage included in this plan, the timber harvest plan is still on the books at the CAL FIRE THP site. Word has it that the original plan submitter, owner of the remaining timber in the plan, may still intend to log the trees on the remaining acreage. Be that it is, as it may, we still find it hard to believe the existing timber harvest plan can be used as a vehicle for such a significantly revised timbering proposal. At best, a major amendment would have to be submitted and reviewed as a new timber harvest plan, so why not review this one, withdraw this one and start from scratch. Here's some news about Boy Scouts illegally felling old-growth trees and damaging endangered plants. Unfortunately, I do not have time to read that entire thing, but apparently the Monterey Bay Boy Scout Council has done a major boo-boo, cutting down trees without permission and endangering endangered plants. I just wanted to announce that this is the last Earth First update for a while. I'm going to be taking the summer off, and we'll resume the Earth First updates in October. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to an Earth First Update broadcast in Moscow, Idaho, you can do so by tuning in to KRFP 92.5 FM on Monday nights at 9:30. But you'll only be able to hear this one, and then we won't have any more until October. You can also listen to or download Earth First Updates at the following website, radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And we want to thank you for listening. Earth First Radio has been on the air for many, many years, and I will continue in the fall. It's just that I'm going to be taking a break for a while and doing some traveling and hopefully seeing some of y'all out there in the wilds of the Western United States. So remember, keep the Earth first. We'll see you in the fall. Bye-bye.